Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the show, a very special edition of the Square Ball Podcast. Dan with you, along with Michael Normanton and a guest, somewhere over the Atlantic, Jeff Reinbold. Hello, Jeff.
How you guys doing? Happy Aloha Friday, by the way.
So are you in Hawaii now or Canada? Which one?
No, I'm in my office in Hawaii, and we're just about to get our day started. It's 6:15 in the morning here.
Oh, bright and early, Brian. So we're just finishing our Friday. So we'll get right to it then. For anybody who doesn't know who you are a Sky NFL presenter, and you've been doing a lot of American football coaching as well. But most of all, Leeds United fan.
Yes, I am. I've been a fan of the Whites since I first came to the UK in 1995. As you always do, you get off the plane and go to the hotel and you're tired and you're jet lagged. So you turn on the TV and just going through the TV, and I saw a soccer game. And at that time, fellas, and I don't know much more now, but at that time, I didn't know if a soccer ball had air or feathers in it. I couldn't say anything. I knew if the thing went in the net, that was good. But I'm watching this game, and this team has these beautiful white uniforms, right? I mean, all white, white long sleeve, white shorts, white socks. And I thought, man, what a pretty uniform, because I'm a uniform fan, right? And so that day, they became my team after I'm watching this game going back and forth like a soccer game does. And then all of a sudden, a player from Leeds comes over and just tackles a guy and knocks him down, kicks him. And the announcer goes, "Oh, Dick, he leads." And I went, "My team."
Can you remember which game it was, which match?
I couldn't tell you. But it was a Premiership match, because back in those days, they were pretty good in the Premiership. And then again, we had the challenge with, everything that's gone on at the club since that time. But now we're kind of trying to climb back in. So
yeah, we should get the plug out of the way, by the way, because you're going to be over this side of the pond for the NFL that's coming to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday, isn't it? The Vikings, Minnesota Vikings against New Orleans Saints. And are you going to be summarizing in the Sky studio?
No, I won't be, because I'm involved with the University of Hawaii football team right now, and I won't be at Sky till after we're done with this season. So I still stay up with it. We do a podcast every week on Sky and some television work for them as we go through the season. But I know there's a tremendous amount of anticipation in London for these games, and the appetite for football in the UK is like it's never been before. It's interesting because, when we had NFL Europe going, we lost a team in London. We lost a team in Scotland. They had to fold. The league folded. But Alistair Kirkwood, who was the president of the NFL UK office at that time, really put his career on the line and convinced people in New York that a regular season game in London could sell. And I'll be honest with you, you could hear the laughter from the New York office all the way in London when the idea was first proposed. But now you look, three games, games in Germany, games in Mexico. The National Football League has truly become a global game.
I guess it kind of mirrors the fortunes of the Premier League to a certain extent. And if we can, we'll just rewind to 1995 when you first got on board with Leeds United. It's the uniforms, the strips that's attracted you, the dirty Leeds thing. So tell us what it was like then in the mid-90s trying to keep in touch with what Leeds United were doing.
Well, you couldn't really. And I mean, it's because I live in Hawaii part of the time and I come to England part of the time. So when I was home in Hawaii, Premiership news was like, you couldn't get it. And this is, internet was just kind of coming on the scene. And so now it's incredible how much Premiership is available to soccer fans around the world, certainly in the United States. And so now I can you know, I can keep up with them. ESPN does a great job of covering the Premiership. In Canada, where I was coaching in the Canadian Football League, they're professionally, TSN, which is Sky Sports or ESPN in Canada, had a Premiership show every week. And so, again, I was able to keep up with my Mighty Whites. Even when they were in the Championship League, I was able to keep up with them. But now we are Premiership forever. It's just time, fellas, before we topple Liverpool, you know.
I think a little way off Liverpool. So you must have got on board at a time where you saw the club grow. Like in the late 90s, we started the European adventures there all the way into the Champions League. So you must have thought, oh, I've chosen a winner here.
Well, you know what? At that, like I said, when I first started to follow the club, they were very good. And then, you know, it's been documented. So I'm not going to, you know, give you a history lesson, because obviously you guys, it's your sport, it's not my sport. But, you know, we got into trouble financially, a lot of mismanagement, things went south. And then the club has fought its way back into the Premiership. And, you know, when we went there, we were doing a NFL tour of England, right? And we went there, and it was like, for me, it was like going to the Promised Land or the Wailing Wall or one, you know, some Lords or one of those places, because just the history, the feel, being in the city. And I went to my first Leeds game, actually at Fulham, and I got to sit in the section, in the Leeds section, sing the songs, and we all love Leeds, and you know, the whole thing, and you know, marching on together. As a matter of fact, on my podcast, I sang March On Together when they made it to the Premiership. I hope you can't go back and find it, because my voice is not very good, but I had to do that just because I'm such a great Leeds fan.
How did you manage to keep in touch with Leeds United then in like the League One days when things went really south?
Well, you know, because I cared about them. And I think if you're a fan, and certainly I'm a fan, you care about your club, it doesn't matter what league they're playing in, you're going to follow them. And, you know, certainly now having them in the Premiership, it makes it much easier. But, you know, I didn't care whether they were in the champ. They could have been in the third league. I didn't care. You know, they're my team.
When you were speaking to people over there about supporting Leeds in that era, did people know who Leeds were? Because obviously the Premier League is kind of a bit of a relatively new thing over in North America.
Yeah, you know, I can remember, this again, kind of an ironic story. I can remember going to Sweden as a 17-year-old exchange student who had never seen soccer before. And my host brother had been to London and had watched a Premiership game, and he had a ball. He had a soccer ball with all of the Premiership teams' names on it. And I can remember Leeds United on that ball, kicking that ball in the backyard of their house in Turku, Sweden. And little did I know that one day I would be, you know, maybe the biggest Leeds fan in all of the state of Hawaii.
So that Fulham game, can you remember when that was?
Oh, boy, that was, it would have been 3 years. It was before COVID, right? So whatever that was, 2019, 18, 19, somewhere in there.
So that's your first experience of Leeds.
That was the first time that I had seen them play live. I had been in the stadium previous in Leeds, but it was just in a, like we were doing a UK NFL tour. And I asked them to actually ask the van driver to stop and let me get out. And I found a way to get into this. Just like a typical fan, you know, I found a way into the stadium. And it was like, I stood there and just marveled at it. Now, I have not made the pilgrimage yet to actually sit in the stadium when they play. That one I'm really looking forward to, and I'm going to get that done. I'm not a bucket list guy, fellas, but I'm going to tell you something. That one is going to happen.
So what was your initial reaction then to being stood in that away end at Fulham with another? Because Leeds at home is great, but Leeds away is something else. It's special. It's got that little secret sauce.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. I felt like I was amongst my people. Like, you know, like I was that salmon swimming upstream, and I finally found where I belonged, right? And it was so much fun to be there and have, you know, have your kid on and sing the songs. And, you know, it just was like, and that's such a beautiful, Fulham's such a beautiful stadium, right? And, you know, it's Craven Cottage is quaint, and I was right down on the pitch, and so you could get, you know, you could see the players, you could see the coaches, and it was fascinating. It was a fantastic experience.
How does that compare to like NFL crowds then, when you experience that? Because it is a different experience, isn't it, stateside?
Yeah, I think so. You know, obviously the traditions in the Premiership or in English soccer, whether it's Championship or Premiership or whatever, are just as strong, maybe stronger in some cases, than they are in the United States. Because you got to remember, National Football League is 100 years old. These soccer clubs in England go back generational. It's generational fandom. Now, we have that in some places in the United States. So, for example, if you're a Steeler fan or you're a Bears fan in Chicago or a Giants fan in New York, but if you're a Carolina Panthers fan, you may be passionate, but you have a 30-year history of your team as opposed to a 130-year history of your team.
So when you came to Elland Road, I mean, before we get to that, actually, do you agree that there's a magic quality about being in any stadium of any kind? You feel it as a sports person, you walk in and it just, there's just that little air of magic about that experience as well, even empty.
No question. And I'll even take it one step further with this. Whether you're talking about football, NFL football, or English football, or it's gladiator sport, right? It really is. And if you've ever been to Rome and walked into the Colosseum, and if the hair on the back of your neck doesn't stand up when you realize that's the genesis, that's the birth of all of Elland Road and, you know, White Hart Lane and, you know, Shea Stadium in New York and, you know, the Rose Bowl in California, those buildings are special because of what goes on in there. There's something that strikes a chord in the human condition, competition, right? Athletic competition, all the way back to the Olympic Games in Greece. I mean, that's all our history. That's all the rich, rich traditions of athletic competition.
So what did you feel when you stepped inside Elland Road? You've got that feeling of being in the amphitheater of the gladiators doing their duels on the pitch, as it were. What is it like though? Because we accept, don't we, I think, as Leeds fans, that Elland Road is run down, it's old, it needs developing, and yet there is a part of you that doesn't ever want to change it ever because it's perfect.
No, and I'm with you. I mean, that's exactly how I feel. And when I went in there, I stood on the pitch and I shut my eyes and I could hear the chants. I could hear, maybe I'm wacky, but that's what it was like to me. And there was a phenomenal, phenomenal documentary that was done on the last season at West Ham and closing down that old, beautiful, beautiful park that had been so important to West Ham fans and generations of West Ham fans. And, you know, obviously, you know, money is we got to realize that money drives sport, right? And you need bigger stadiums, you need skyboxes, you need all those things. But I am a big believer in tradition, and I'm a big believer in if you can leave things as they are, rather than tear it all down and start again, use the infrastructure, leave some of the history, leave some of the tradition. You know, I just really think that's important. I think it's important for us culturally as much as it is for us as fans.
You've got a long history of coaching. Do you think a good coach has to tap into that sort of thing?
I think if he's smart, he does. I don't think there's any question about it. Each situation is unique. And if you come into a club, whether it's a college football team, an NFL team, or a Premiership team, you better learn the history of that club and the nuances and traditions and all of those things. Here at Hawaii, we say there's a Native American saying that we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us, right? Well, here we've kind of changed it a little bit and just say we stand on the shoulders of giants, because every player, we've had 69 players drafted in the NFL since the merger. We've had 17 Super Bowl winners come out of this program. Well, if you don't understand that and you don't know that, you don't know your history, you don't know, then you shortchange the players who are here now. And, you know, the young players at Leeds or the young players in any club need to know the history of the club. I think that's absolutely important. The coaches need to know it.
What do you think of the recent coaches, thinking specifically of Bielsa and more recently Jesse Marsh?
Bielsa, one of the regrets I have of my time in the UK is I never had a chance to sit down and speak with him because I had so much respect for the way he coached, right? And again, you talk about the Fulham game. You know, he was early, I mean, he hadn't been there very long when I went and watched him play. And he sat on that bucket and I watched him with his players and I and the interaction he had with his players. And there was criticism of him for pushing his players too hard, that they wouldn't be able to make it through the long season because they ran too much and they, you know, his practices were too difficult. But I think what he did was change the culture on a football team, on a underachieving club. And he was, I think, was universally loved by the fans. I think when he got fired, you could sense that. And I was in London working for Sky when that happened. And, you know, I wish I would have had a way to reach out to him. And I understand he doesn't speak very good English or doesn't like speaking in English, but I would have really loved to have an opportunity to sit down and talk coaching with him, talk football with him.
I think maybe people stateside won't realise what a monumental achievement it was, because obviously three teams go up every year. A lot of teams make it look quite easy. Watford, Norwich, teams like that come up and down all the time. But the way Bielsa was able to drag us from nowhere and with the weight of all the history we have, I think was his real achievement, that he managed to, he was the right size for the club, I think was the thing. And it felt like for years we'd not had anyone big enough to actually take it all on and you know, get us up.
Well, yeah. And you know, the thing I think people need to understand is the enormity of a job like that, the enormity of taking on all of that, not only all the, you know, all the technical aspects of it, all the, you know, organizational aspects of it, but all the historical aspects of a club like Leeds. And his personality was big enough, you know, to stand up against it and to, you know, embrace it rather than fight against it. It's going to be interesting to see, in my opinion, how Coach Marsh does, right? Now, again, he's an, quote, outsider. He's an American come in. He's not exactly Ted Lasso, but, I mean, he's an American that's come in to a very, very historic club. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how his tenure goes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
What about his coaching style? Because you could suggest he was a little bit overexposed at the start, did a lot of interviews, a lot of podcasts when the club was struggling, and I think it put a few people's noses out of joint. Maybe Marsh himself wasn't aware of it. What did you make of his start? Because it was difficult.
Well, I think it was difficult, and it was following a guy that was very popular. Even though he had gotten fired, you know, Bielsa took the club to the Premiership. And if you remember, guys, what that was like when they finally crashed the party, and the way, I mean, you guys were there,
yeah.
The way that fans reacted, the way that the city reacted, the way that Leeds United Nation around the world reacted. Well, he'll always be an iconic figure on Ellen Road. He has to be. Well, Jesse Marsh has to follow that as an outsider with his own way of doing business. And he was much different publicly than Bielsa was. Bielsa was kind of, I wouldn't say private, but, you know, the language was an issue. And he was much more traditional in the way he approached the game in terms of interviews and those kinds of things. Marsh comes in with the open American style where, I mean, that's just the way business is done here. And he had to learn. He's had to learn. You're going to bump into some things when you take a head coaching job in any sport. And you're particularly going to bump into things when you follow a legend and you're not, quote, from the club, mm-hmm. you know, or from the boys club.
So what is the open American style that you refer to there? Because we've got a lot of people who've seen bits of it in Marsh, but maybe don't understand what it is you're referring to there. What do you mean?
Well, coaches in the United States, you say, for example, the media in the United States is very different than the media in the UK is. And player access and coach access is much, much different. You know, I couldn't understand. I couldn't get my head around when I first came to the UK why I never saw David Beckham interviewed after a game, unless it was for like a Sunday magazine or, you know, a major. In the National Football League and in college football and in, you know, sport in general in the United States, you don't have a choice about whether you speak to the media or not. You have to be available for the media. So from the time our players are young, and I'm talking about in high school, because high school sport is very big here, they are used to being in front of the camera. They're used to having questions asked of them. As a matter of fact, they expect it. Where, you know, you look at the Premiership, and if you're not one of the guys that's brought to the media, you don't have to speak to them. You can walk right at, you know, I've seen the tunnel, right, where they walk right to the bus and the media is kind of there with their microphones, hoping that the guy will stop and talk to him, but he doesn't have to. So it's a much more open scenario with the media. And I think that's one of the reasons why Marsh was like that as he got started.
What do you think he needs to do to be a success at Leeds?
Well, I can tell you, the first thing is you got to score more goals than the other guys. Now, that's the first thing. I think he's got to, you know, again, you got to continue winning at the professional level in any sport comes down first and foremost. You have to have talent. You have to have enough good players. Now, you don't have to have the best players, but you have to have enough good players, right? And we've seen teams come in and buy their way towards championships. But we've also seen teams in every sport, and I can name the NFL, I can name Major League Baseball, I can name the NBA and the Premiership, teams that have spent a lot of money and not won a championship because there's a missing piece in there somewhere. And it's usually what has come to be known as culture. What goes on in the locker room? Who are your leaders? Luck has some to do with it, and health has a lot to do with it. So that's a really complex question. But the first and most, and it's interesting, I just had an interview with a NFL Hall of Fame head coach yesterday. And we were talking about this very topic. And he said the number one factor in winning is talent. Player talent, coaching talent, evaluation talent in your personnel department, throughout your organization, you have to have talented people who are driven to success, who put the success of the club before any personal success, right? Now, you're not going to get 100% buy-in with that, but you have to have enough that are focused that way and moving in that direction to drag the other ones with them.
And what do you think of the Americanization of Leeds and the wider Premier League as well?
I have two feelings about it because I got a foot in the UK and I've got a foot in the world, right, in Hawaii. And I understand how the Glazers and some of the American owners can be viewed with such disdain because they're outsiders who have bought their way into what is your game, right? And I think if the San Francisco people, the ownership group that has the 49ers, which I know has bought a great deal of the, you know, Leeds, I would just caution them to be very, very, very careful about how they treat the traditions of the club, the history of the club, the fans, And you don't want to be, we have a term in the United States called carpetbagger, which is after the Civil War, guys from the North came down and they, you know, they basically fleeced people in the South because they had money. You don't want to be seen as a carpetbagger owner. You don't want to be, you need to be visible. You need to be seen as a part of the organization, not, you know, some rich guy that just kind of sits across the Atlantic and, you know, like a puppeteer and pulls strings, or like, you know, who was it? The Roman emperor that fiddled while Rome burned, right? You don't want to be Nero, right? Nero, yeah. And I think that's really important. I think you need to be there. One of the things I think is important is they need to be seen in the community and not just as helicopter owners that fly in and fly out. They need a presence. They need people on the ground in the stadium, in the community, in the city that are accessible to the fans. Because why are we fans? Because we want to be a part of something. And any new ownership, any new coaching regime, you need to be available to your fans. I think it's absolutely critical. Now, Bill Belichick doesn't think so, and he's had a lot of success, but that's his style. But I think for long-term sustained success, particularly when you're an outsider, you better be sensitive to the traditions and history and, you know, what's gone on for years.
On that, I think the Glazers have done a great job, I have to say. I have to commend their work at Man United. But over in the States, how are the owners of the 49ers perceived? Are they considered to be doing a good job?
Yeah, I think they're one of the class organizations. You know, they've had their rocky times too, but they have built a beautiful stadium in Santa Clara, south of San Francisco. Their facility, which I've been into 3 or 4 or 5 times, is absolutely as nice as you could ever hope to have. They have been, you know, you watch like this. These are the little things that I pay attention to. You look at a San Francisco a San Francisco 49ers uniform from the Joe Montana days and the San Francisco 49er uniform today. It's the same uniform. It's the tradition. That gold helmet and that red jersey and those gold pants go back to Kezar Stadium when they played in San Francisco in the 70s and they were horrible. That's still the same kit that they wear today. So I think those kinds of things are really, really important. Now they're, you know, big into social media. They're into the world's changed since 1970. But if you're a Niner fan, you see that uniform, you know, that's my team. And that's important.
Do you think they'll be a good fit for Leeds United, assuming they do take majority ownership?
I think so, because I think there's enough similarities between the club. This is the 49ers are a historic football team. I'm talking about one of the oldest teams in the NFL. They're a team that has been through tough, tough times, playing in a bad stadium, underfunded. And they've also been to the top of the mountain, where they had consecutive Super Bowl championships and more. You know, they basically ruled, they and the Cowboys ruled the 80s. And, you know, and they're on their way back. So I think there's a lot of similarities between the two clubs. They're iconic franchises. They're iconic brands in professional sport.
And from a financial perspective, what do you think we can expect? Because there are some differences between the Premier League and NFL. NFL, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a salary cap that they have to negotiate. And the 49ers have a reputation for being quite good operators within the salary cap.
Yeah, I think that, you know, certainly I don't sit in their board meetings, right? But I would say if you look at the philosophy of the 49er organization and you extend it and say, okay, if they do become majority holders in Leeds, I would think that they would take that same philosophy towards soccer or towards your football. And they are a class organization. They do things the right way. They do not, you know, they don't worry about what it's going to cost. They worry about getting it done. Now, we in the NFL, as you said, there's a salary cap. There's no salary cap in the Premiership. So they'll have to adjust to that world. But again, these are people that are very, very smart, that have been very successful in professional sport. And I would think that that's a pretty good indicator of what's to come at Leeds United.
So let's say you are on the 49ers board, just a little flight of fancy now. What's the first thing you do then when you get into Elland Road? If you take majority ownership, where do you start?
Well, I think there's a couple things. You know, you obviously you look at every aspect of an organization when you go in, every aspect, the on-the-field product, the off-the-field product, the stadium, all of those things, because it's all part of the experience. It's all part of being a first-class organization. I personally hope they never mess with the stadium other than to improve it. And I think you can keep the infrastructure and you can keep the beauty of it without and improve it without tearing it down and starting over and make a, you know, an antiseptic new. I mean, new stadiums are beautiful. The thing they got at Tottenham, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. But it's very antiseptic to me. I don't go in there and I feel history. When you go to Elland Road, you feel history. Don't touch that. And you can do it. You can put new seats in and you can, you know, help the sight lines and you can build luxury boxes and you can do all that, but you don't have to tear it down, right? Be sensitive to the history. Be sensitive to the grandfather who brought his son to watch Leeds and became a white fan, and his son, his grandson to Leeds, they can all, you know, they can all enjoy that being a fan. The other thing is the product on the field. And that goes back to exactly what we just talked about. You need talent, talented, driven people in every aspect of the organization that want to move the team forward and want to move the club forward. That's your media relations people, that's your trainers, that's your strength coaches, that's your athletes, that's your coaches, that's the people that's, you know, clean the place, that's everybody that has anything to do with the organization. And the shareholders of Leeds are really who? They're the fans that come and pay the pounds to watch their team, to buy the kit, to do all of those things. And you better service your shareholders. And that's important.
So what represents a good return this season then, do you think, for Leeds United? Back to the on-field stuff.
I just think that we got to continue. Like right now, if I was Jesse Marsh, what I would want my team to focus on is incremental improvement. Don't be, you know, we all know that there's an end game. We all know we have to, you know, it's a bottom line business. Pro sport is a high performance industry. It's a production oriented business. We get that, right? But don't look at the end of the season. Look at how can we get 1 point this week? How can we be 1-0 this week? And then let's go to next week and let's work inside of that to be better as a club. And if they do that, then I think to get into the top half of the Premiership, that's got to be the immediate goal. Ultimately, you want to win the thing, right? Because that's why you play. But the reality of it is, you know, don't end watch, right? Let's be 1-0 this week. Let's find a way to get one more ball in the net than whoever we're playing, right? And then let's go on to the next. Let's evaluate it for what it was. Be truthful about where we're at with our players. He's good enough. He's not good enough. He needs this. We got to get him that, whatever it is. And then go to next week. Learn from it, flush it, and go to next week. And I think if they can capture that mentality, which is very, very difficult in professional sport, because what we're doing right now, chopping it up like we're chopping it up, that has a tendency to do what? Take everybody's focus outside of where it should be. And I think that they have to be internally focused and they have to worry about what's going on in their building and let Man U and Chelsea and Liverpool and Norwich and every other club, that's their business. You have nothing. You can't control their business. You can only control what you can control. And that's what happens in Elland Road and the practice facility and all the other things.
Hey, so there is truth in the Any Given Sunday speech there. It's inch by inch.
Yeah, it is, because that's how you build something that lasts. See, to me, as a Leeds fan, I hope that they get in the Premiership and they build it in such a way that it lasts until I'm dead. until I'm no more. You know, I'm no more. But they that. But there's still this thing like this, the meteoric up and down, and all of that. It kills. It kills you.
Yes, we know. Well, Jeff, thanks for coming on. We really, really appreciate it. And hopefully we can talk again in the future and the roller coaster has just leveled off a little bit more and we can have an enjoyable season after the World Cup. After the World Cup.
Yeah, well, Dan, I appreciate you guys having me on. Michael, thank you so much. And again, anytime you want to talk about those whites, baby, next time I will wear my Leeds jersey on.
It's a nice uniform. It's a nice uniform. So NFL back in the UK this weekend, start of October. It's the two teams are Minnesota Vikings, New Orleans Saints. It's all on Sky Sports.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Aloha.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.